You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
All right, well, Fight Island was officially christened tonight for the UFC in Abu Dhabi. There was no baptism to be had in the main event of UFC 251. What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the official UFC 251 post-fight show here on MMAfighting.com. I am Mike Heck on location this week from Boston, Massachusetts, visiting the parents this weekend. That is Jose Youngs. Jose, main event, Kamaru Usman retains the welterweight title against Jorge Masvidal. Challenger looked pretty darn good in that first round. I'm pretty surprised that two judges gave Usman that first round, but it was the much fresher champion that was able to sort of chip away at the always game Jorge Masvidal throughout the fight, right?
You say fresher champion, but Kamaru Usman was basically been in camp since beginning of this year. This fight was like been booked and booked and booked. He was supposed to fight earlier. He was supposed to fight Gilbert Burns, and all of a sudden Jorge Masvidal steps in. So yes, he's technically fresher because he's had the full camp and everything, but I think Kamaru Usman wasn't 100% in that fight either, considering this long extended fight camp he had, a la similar to Tony Ferguson with all these fights falling apart. But Kamaru Usman won nonetheless. Might not have been the most exciting fight. I saw a couple of tweets complaining about the fight, and I really take that. I felt it was a lot of fans that were on this Jorge Masvidal hype train. He's on the video game cover. He's on this baptism run, the resurrection, super necessary punches, BMF title, this and that. And they were expecting violence. Even I myself said a fight between Usman and Masvidal probably has a higher chance of ending in a violent way, but it did not. Kamaru Usman won. I had him winning all five rounds. The first round, I guess, it didn't really matter to me who won that. I still, Kamaru Usman won at least four of the rounds comfortably. The people are complaining about the foot stomps, the wrestling, the headbutts, all that stuff, but Kamaru Usman did what he had to do to win. That's exactly the type of fight I thought he would take to Jorge Masvidal, because for all the talk about Jorge Masvidal taking this fight on short notice, Kamaru Usman also took this fight on short notice, and it's a completely different fighter between Gilbert Burns and Jorge Masvidal. That's completely rechanged. Left his camp, had his new Trevor Whitman in his corner for the first time, fighting the BMF guy. All this bad blood is in the air. All the pressure's on him to perform. Like we ourselves said, all the pressure's on Usman, not a whole lot on Masvidal. But at the end of the day, Usman did what he had to do. I didn't have a problem with the way he fought. It might not have been the most exciting, but if I was going to predict a way Usman would pull this off, this is exactly how I thought he would do it.
Yeah, when you get a fight like this and you have a guy as hot as Masvidal, that brings in a lot of the casual fan base that doesn't watch, you know, as many events as we watch, and some of the hardcore fans that watch everything. So most people expected this fight to go exactly that way. I thought the first round was going to be the most interesting round, obviously, because if Masvidal was going to get it done, he's probably going to have to do it in the first 5 minutes. And this is the fight we got. Like, Kamaru Usman defends his title for the second time. It was another classic Usman-like performance, and he gets a one-sided win in a highly anticipated main event. So in the end, we like to talk about like the overall letter grade, but it felt like, just kind of looking at the time slot when we're all said and done, as we were getting ready to hit record here, we were just like, man, this is super late. Like, I feel like the card kind of, and the whole night in a weird way, went kind of slow, did it not?
I think it started off really, really quickly. It might have just been on my part. Like, I feel like the first few flew by. And all of a sudden, I had been watching fights for 2.5-3 hours. I'm like, oh, wow, this fight card is going quickly. I like this pace. And then we hit the main card, and Amanda Ribas comes in and just submits Paige VanZant immediately, which went exactly as I expected to do. But then there was decision with Rose and Andrade. And then even Jan Aldo ends in a finish, but it was in the fifth round. So they still basically fought for 25 minutes. And then we get 25 minutes of Volkanovski Holloway. And then we get 25 minutes of Usman and Masvidal. So of these... We saw that graphic on the screen, like all of the UFC cards are three title fights, and like we had the UFC 214 had like Woodley and Maya and Jones and Cormier and Cyborg Avenger, and then 217, 205, like those had some bangers. Like 217 had three epic fights, three like violent, like just three of the craziest finishes you'll see. And then of course, 205, the Conor McGregor show, and then 217 had the DC Jones trilogy. So I think we were a little maybe spoiled on these three title fight cards where we're expecting something like that. And I loved all great fights, all spectacular fights. But I think a lot of fans that were tuning in to see Fight Island and the Masvidal train and all these title fights might have been I could see why they might have been a little disappointed. I didn't have a problem with it, but probably wasn't the night Dana White wanted in terms of finishes.
Yeah, the main event may have disappointed some people, but for meritocracy's sake, this is like the best thing that could have happened for the welterweight division. Like if you're Gilbert Burns, if you're Leon Edwards, these two guys are pretty happy right now, especially Gilbert Burns.
100%. I mean, we said it on, I can't remember if it was on What the Heck or a post-fight show or a preview show, whatever. They all kind of blends together at this point in the summer. But we said if Masvidal wins, that is going to be a problem for the UFC's pockets, the welterweight division. I mean, we were talking about him fighting, bringing the both belts to the Conor McGregor the table and all this. But Kamaru Usman won, and it's a no-brainer that Gilbert Burns gets the rematch. He should have been fighting tonight before COVID-19. He caught COVID-19 and had to pull out the card. So, yeah, for the welterweight division and the martial art fans of the world that don't like, quote-unquote, skipping the line or holding up divisions, I think it's a good thing. But I honestly love chaos. If Masvidal had won, I think it would have been a fun time in the world of MMA.
And Masvidal, let's be clear, we all know this. He was the A side heading into this fight. He's the reason there was a lot of buzz and a lot of fanfare. When you add a guy like Gamebred and the streak that he's on, that's what happens. But a lot of people want to know where he goes from here, because despite losing the fight tonight, he still has a ton of options moving forward. Chaos can still reign in some way, Jose.
Can you say that again? You cut off for a quick second.
Chaos can reign For Jorge Masvidal, doubt about it, because he's got so many options moving forward despite the loss tonight.
Yeah, I mean, Jorge Masvidal, Kamaru Usman himself said it. Like, he's going to lose. He's like, Usman said it. He's like, he's going to lose. He's going to have all these, like, excuses built in. Took the fight on 6 days' notice. Flew across the country. Doesn't have his coach in the gym. COVID-19, this and that. So, like, I think Masvidal obviously cooled. Anytime you lose, you cool a little bit. Unless you're Conor McGregor and Nate Diaz, and it's such an insane finish that they run it back and you have another epic fight like that. But for Masvidal, you're obviously going to cool a little bit, but he himself said, let me get a couple more wins and they'll run it back. I'm sure he would love to fight Usman on a full camp, but the Colby Covington fight is there. I think that is going to drum up a whole lot of interest. I think people might even be more interested in that fight and the dynamic between those two fighters than Usman and Masvidal. I think that Colby Covington and Jorge Masvidal fight does not need a title on the line. That's just two guys that hate each other that want to break brick on each other's faces. Usman can fight Gilbert Burns. Leon Edwards, of course, out there. Wonderboy Thompson's working his way up. Santiago Ponzinibbio, I think, has COVID too, so he's somewhere out there. So the welterweight division will move. But for now, Masvidal, of course, cooled, but he's still, still the hottest commodity at 170 pounds.
Yeah, I think Covington's the fight to make, but even the Leon Edwards fight, like no one talks about Leon Edwards versus Jorge Masvidal, but there's so much history there. But I understand why Masvidal might be hesitant. It's not a huge money fight, but Colby would be massive. As we move ahead to the co-main event, saw Alexander Volkanovski retained his featherweight title in a very, very close fight. Max Holloway made some adjustments, some really good ones heading into the fight. You saw it throughout. Volkanovski made his adjustments sort of in the middle of the fight, and in the end, gets a split decision victory. And look, there's no way you could call this a robbery, Jose. Like, if Holloway got the nod, I wouldn't have been upset. Volkanovski getting it, that doesn't upset me either. What did you think of the featherweight title fight and how the decision went?
I had Max winning. I can't remember the exact scores I had, the exact rounds I had, but I had him winning. I thought it was pretty obvious. Max won. It's not a robbery because at the end of it, I'm like, that was a really, really close fight. The problem is, in my mind, Max clearly won the first two. I think that's obvious. He won the first two. He had a bunch of knockdowns. But then when the rounds that Volkanovski won, which would be 3, 4, 5, I think on the judges' scorecards, I don't think he clearly won any of those. I think in the fourth round, I was looking at this, I'm like, Max could be up 4-0. Or it could be 2-2. Like, that's how close this is right now. So Max is in the situation where he gets all these knockdowns, clearly wins the first two, and then Volkanovski, I don't want to say skates by or steals or anything, because they were just razor thin. Those were 10-9 rounds. Either round could have gone to them. He seemed to be going to the well a lot with those leg kicks, and Holloway was making a lot of adjustments, as you said. I think in the first two rounds, he looked like a completely different fighter. Looks like the greatest featherweight of all time in there. And I thought after the first two rounds, I was like, Max is going to win this. Like, he looks unbelievable in there. But at the end, Volkanovski pulled it out. I was doing Twitter reacts for the site. I tell you, Alexander Volkanovski's fellow fighters are not happy about that decision. And we could talk all we want about judges and scorecards and this, but if a fighter's watching it and the majority of fighters are complaining about it, maybe they're just the most vocal and the ones that disagree or aren't saying anything. But the majority of the fighters I saw react completely disagree. They thought Volkanovski won at least three of those rounds, and I don't disagree with them. But Volkanovski won, and Max is now 0-2 against the champion. It's a weird time to be a featherweight, because you got a quote unquote like this champion that's on the super long run, that's looked uber impressive, beats Holloway twice, beats Aldo, and then now we can go out to these bigger fights. But you're always getting in the back of your mind like, yo, you lost that second fight to Holloway. I wish it didn't go that way.
So what do we do now? I mean, if Holloway won, matchmaking would be much easier because you could just run Volkanovski back for the third time. But you know, this is a tough fight. Maybe you turn Volko around at the end of the year. But there's so many questions we still need answered at 145 pounds. We got one coming up on Wednesday between Calvin Kattar and Dan Ige. And then you got Korean Zombie. You got Brian Ortega. You got Zabit Magomedsharipov. You got Yair Rodriguez. There's so many questions that still need to be answered before we can even start talking about what's next for Volkanovski, right?
Yeah, I think even Alexander Volkanovski himself said, like, you know, like, Max deserves the title, but he was really hoping a lot of these 145ers would fight each other and someone would really break away from the pack. Volkanovski was like that. Even Max Holloway was like that, because remember when the 145-pound division was all tied up between, it seems like, Connor and Aldo, and even Frankie Edgar fought Aldo for the interim title, and then Max was just like, I'm just going to keep fighting and I'm going to keep winning. And that's what Volkanovski did. He just kept fighting and fighting and fighting until you couldn't deny him a title fight. And that's what Alexander Volkanovski won. Max Holloway just happened to be the next man up, and he goes, sure, he deserves it. I'll run it back. I'm really interested in the Ortega Korean Zombie fight. I think that would make sense for the next title shot, depending on, like, of course, Kattar, Ige, I think could maybe fight the winner of the beat Yair Rodriguez and all the stuff. But again, it's too soon to matchmake, because, like, look what happened. Gilbert Burns is supposed to fight tonight. And that was, what, 6 days ago, 7 days ago? I think it was like a week ago we did a reaction show, and we were like, this is worst-case scenario. This is going to be awful for the welterweight division. What are we going to do? So a lot could make sense matchmaking-wise down the road, but in 24 hours, a fight could fall out. I mean, I was talking to Alex K. Lee, who, God bless him, he was trying to write Great Divide. And it seemed like every time he finally wrote it, a fight would fall out. And then he'd say, all right, I'm going to replace it with this fight. And then the fight is rebooked, and he has to rewrite it. So who knows? We can talk about what we want all we want, but until the world is at least stable, it's an impossible task.
Yeah, we may not have clarity, but it's still a pretty good problem to have. 100%. You have so many contenders, but... First of three title fights, we had Piotr Jan finishing Jose Aldo in the fifth round. And I feel like, Jose, it's one of those fights where Jan is going to be praised for the way he performed tonight, especially down the stretch, but not as much as she should be, because the focus goes to Leon Roberts for letting that fight go on for far too long. So first off, and I don't want to take the shine off of Jan because he looked phenomenal tonight, but that was way too late of a stoppage, like way too late.
Yeah, I think we talk about giving, like, in title fights, you want to give the fighter, like, you want to give them the benefit of the doubt when they're down there, like, it all came, like, Dominic Cruz, of course, I can't even remember the ref's name, but he was complaining about the referee smelling like beer and cigarettes and
Cruz, yeah.
This was Dominic Cruz, of course, UFC 249. Keith Peterson just complaining that he wasn't giving him the opportunity to step in there. But then also a fight later, we see the referee stop the fight between Gaethje and Ferguson, and we all like that was a great move, that was an unbelievable move, this and that. And then we see this, and it's the exact opposite. Like Jose Aldo was in the fight for the first three rounds. I even was like, wow, Jose Aldo, like I think somewhere in the third round, it really looked like Jose. We talked about this on the A side, like the difference between like experience and like youth. And it really looked like Aldo's experience was just like turning the corner. Like in that second round, he went to the leg kicks and it was working. It was working so well. And then in the third round, it started to look like he was going to the body a lot more. And I was like, the Aldo he turned the corner now. And then Jan was just like, absolutely not. I'm just going to run through this guy. I'm going to make adjustment too. I'm going to switch stances. I'm going to do this and that. I'm going to start going to the body and then jump on top and use his head as a basketball. And I think, I don't know how many it took, but that fight could have been stopped maybe 60 or 90 seconds sooner. And we wouldn't be having this conversation. So yeah, awful, not terrible. Like agreed, Aldo should. It was a good stop. It was a good quote stoppage. Just came way too late.
Yeah,
like unless you're Matt Brown, who thinks the referee was doing a good job, which I don't agree with.
Yeah, it was like 35 shots too many. But yeah. And it's crazy because the fight, Jan almost got the fight stopped in the first round. Like yeah. Aldo is tough as nails, but Piotr Jan looked great. Game plan seemed pretty apparent. Keep Aldo sort of guessing early, and then just begin the process of wearing him down a bit and then turn up the volume. By the fourth round, this is all Piotr Jan. What did you think, A, of the fight itself? Because I thought it was probably the best of the three title fights.
Definitely,
and 100%. The performance of the new champion overall.
100% the best performance of the three, Piotr Jan. Like the first two, three rounds I was like, this fight absolutely rules. Like this is just high level Muay Thai striking. Like both of them are really light on their front toes and they were heavy on their back and they were switching stances. Like Aldo's going to the body and the legs. Piotr Jan would switch stances and then like slap that jab down the middle. I absolutely loved that fight. But then Piotr Jan just pulled away. He just put his foot on the gas and just didn't allow Aldo to breathe and finished it. I mean, I picked Jan to win. I didn't think Aldo. I said Aldo's not going to get destroyed in there. I thought it would be a lot closer than it was. It wasn't as close as I thought, but I think Aldo didn't look out like he did. He looked like he belonged in there. I get he probably didn't deserve the title fight, but it was still a great fight of the three. That, like you said, of the three title fights, that was the best, and I still think he beat Marlon Moraes. So I don't know what's next for Jose Aldo, but the UFC has a star, Piotr Jan, especially if Khabib doesn't want to fight anymore after the passing of his dad, which is completely understandable. Even Dana White said they're going to leave him alone for a little bit. With Russia not being in the World Cup and Russia not being in the Olympics, they are dead. And of course, those things aren't happening right now anyway during the pandemic, but they weren't going to be in those anyway because of an anti-doping violation. Russia is in desperate need of sports stars. And if the UFC is the only sport in town going right now, and Khabib is obviously the biggest star in the world over there, and if he hangs it up, and they have another champion, Piotr Jan, who's right there ready to take the reins, who has an exciting style in a very stacked division, I think the UFC could have an absolute superstar on their hand, especially if he learns like that broken English like Khabib, because he's already has the humor of it. Like you can see it on Twitter. You can see it in his media days. If he can at least get his English down, the UFC has a gold mine on their hand with Piotr Jan.
Yeah, if you go back into the archives on the YouTube channel here, I interviewed Piotr Jan, and the first couple answers that he gave me were in English. Like, yeah, he did a pretty good job. He's definitely learning, getting better, and that's great for his star power as well. But there's no need to discuss who's next, Jose. It's Aljamain Sterling, and anything else would be an absolute travesty.
We're not even going to come up with possible scenarios because that's not going to happen. I mean, Dana White said he's next. Even Jose Aldo in the media day, he's like, I'm obviously focused on Piotr Jan, but I understand if I beat Piotr Jan, Aljamain Sterling is next. Like, it's so clear. It's like of all of these title fights that have happened, like if the UFC decides, no, we're going to do Usman versus Leon Edwards, I wouldn't be surprised. And I also wouldn't complain because I think Leon Edwards also deserves a rematch. He deserved his rematch against Kamaru Usman a long time ago. If the UFC gives, if they give anyone else to Piotr Jan for whatever reason, it's just throw the rankings out the door. Throw everything out the door because, like, yes, Cody Garbrandt called him out. He has the beef with Sugar Sean. There's all these other bantamweights. It's Aljamain Sterling. We're not even going to
pretend there's a possible scenario after that.
What if Cejudo says, you know what?
No, there's none. I'm hungry. There's no way. Never going to happen. It's pure. I don't think Henry Cejudo wants to fight at 135. I don't think he wants to fight Piotr Jan. I think he already tweeted he wants to fight Alexander Volkanovski. That would be the only one he would come back for. So I'm not even going to add Henry Cejudo to that name. It is Piotr Jan, Aljamain Sterling is next, and I cannot wait.
Yeah, that's the fight. I'm playing a little bit of a devil's advocate here, but going further down the main card, Rose Namajunas, Jessica Andrade, they had an incredible battle for 15 minutes. Andrade took over in that third round, but Rose looked great tonight. And I'll be honest, I was a little nervous for Rose because she said some pretty alarming things over the last few months, you know, talking about her mental state, her career path, et cetera. Said she wants to be the world's greatest farmer now as opposed to the world's greatest fighter. But she looked pretty darn good tonight and got a nice win and was able to avenge a loss.
I wish there were two scenarios that two things that were added to that. I wish it was five rounds and I wish it was a small cage. If it's in a small cage and that's five rounds, I think that's a completely different fight from both women. I think the small cage would obviously help Jessica Andrade. I think she was starting to pick it up a little bit, especially with all the damage to Rose's face. If it's a smaller cage in five and it's five and she gets 10 more minutes after that, I think Jessica Andrade could have pulled that out. It reminded me of the Valentina Amanda Nunes, the first fight, where right at the end of that third round, like halfway through the third round, you see Andrade start to pull the corner and do a lot of damage. Rose is starting to show signs of like blood and cuts on her face. I wish they had run it back within five rounds and in the apex, but I get why they didn't. They wanted to stack this card now. But again, they can do that down the road. If Rose Namajunas faces Zhang Weili next and she somehow wins, I would not mind seeing Andrade Rose in the apex for the title five rounds. But again, that's so far down the line. Awesome fight from Rose. She got back in the win column. We talk about all the concerning things she said leading up to this fight, but she's a professional because remember, she was on that bus that Conor McGregor attacked. She of course was not mentally the same after that, but what'd she do? Like 2 days later, she went out there and had one of the best performances of her life. So she knows when to fight and how to fight. She was beating Andrade the first time before she just got dropped on her skull and got knocked dead. So for all we know, she could be 2-0 against Andrade if that doesn't happen. So, but Rose is a professional, awesome win. I think, again, the no-brainer fight for me, unless Tatiana Suarez miraculously recovers and gets thrown into the title contention, I think it's Rose Zhang Weili. And I also think the UFC really wants that fight because those are two of their most marketable stars at 115 pounds.
Well, here's the thing, back to devil's advocate, because sure. Rose clearly banged up after that fight, could be a broken orbital. We don't know like the exact, you know, extent of everything, but she wasn't at the post-fight media scrum or anything like that. And you could certainly make the argument that she could fight for the belt against Zhang Weili next, and I would not hate that at all. But she could be out for a little while after that fight. And like you said, we also don't know the health status of one Tatiana Suarez. So the question is, do we try to get Weili in there as soon as possible? Like if she's ready to go in a couple months, like get her a fight, even if you rematch Joanna or something, people aren't going to complain about that. Or do you just hold Zhang Weili off until Rose is ready to fight and just book that one?
Well, I think that's ultimately up to the champion. I mean, of course, you remember all the ordeal she had to go through just to fight Joanna and Jacek. I mean, this was right when the coronavirus was about to hit, was hitting China like worse than ever. So if she's spending time at home and doesn't want to travel to any of these countries that are being hit hard, I wouldn't blame her. So ultimately, it's up to her. I don't know who else. Like, again, if she can run it back with Joanna, I wouldn't hate it. I think that's one of the best title fights I've ever seen. Rose makes sense. Tatiana makes sense. Nina Ansaroff is having a baby, so she's out the window. And then who's next? Claudia? Carla? So I like, you want to give her Carla or Claudia next? Like, I mean, Carla's fighting Marina Rodriguez in like, what, a couple days? Like a week or so? So Claudia. She's like, the Claudia has a fight booked already. So who's next? Like, who really knows at the end of the day? Like, even if you play process of elimination, you have to go really far down the rankings list to find Zhang Weili a title, an opponent for a next title defense. So I think it has to be Rose, unless Tatiana Suarez recovers. But even then, I'd give her a tune-up fight before tossing her in there against a savage like the champion. So I think it's got to be Rose. You just maybe hold Zhang Weili until Rose 100% recovers.
Yeah, I agree with that. Great win for Amanda Ribas tonight, kicking off the main card. Submits Paige VanZant in the first round. She got a very bright future for herself at 115 pounds. Her personality is absolutely infectious as well. Paige VanZant seems to be getting ready to dance off to Bellator. As you know, even if she won this fight, we probably would have expected that anyways. But I mean, if you're ever having a bad day, Jose, and I think you could attest to this, just go back and watch the virtual media day scrum with Amanda Ribas, and it's just going to put a smile on all of our faces.
Yeah, it was a very big clash of emotion, like the emotions both fighters brought to their media days. Because like Paige wasn't even at the normal media day; she like did her own on her phone, like separate. Like she didn't have the normal backdrop and everything, and she just seemed like she wanted to get that over with and then just go in and fight. But Amanda Ribas was taking advantage of everything. Like the cameras were there, even on the at the beginning when they're doing like they're playing the Who and everyone is all excited. They're getting hyped up and they show the fighters like hyping up the fight. Like Amanda is just laughing. She's just having a good time. She's taking advantage of the cameras on there. So unbelievable performance though. She is a dangerous woman. We're talking about people like she's this fight was at flyweight, obviously, but she wants to drop back down to strawweight. She wins one, maybe two more against game opponents. I can't imagine the UFC is not going to want to give her a title fight, too, because, again, marketable star, infectious personality, from Brazil, speaks great English, checks all the boxes they want on a title challenger or champion. And yeah, I would love that fight. But again, not close yet. Amazing performance. It went exactly as I thought it would. So yeah, the UFC has another bright star on their hands.
Yeah, keep building her up slowly. No need to rush her into top five opponents or anything like that. I think like maybe the Angela Hill versus Michelle Watterson loser, I think that makes perfect sense for her.
Unless like Felice Herrick comes back. I think she's sitting there 15-16. Maybe the winner of Marina Rodriguez wins. You could give Amanda Ribas that fight. And I know they kind of, or Tisha Torres coming off that big win. There's a lot of important fights at strawweight. But again, yeah, Amanda Ribas isn't near the title picture yet. But maybe in 12 months, maybe.
Some great performances on the prelims, but man, Yuri Prochazka stole the show with just such a sick knockout of Volkan Ozdemir. I'm not gonna lie, Jose, I thought this was too much for Yuri to kick off his UFC career, but man, that crazy monster proved me wrong in a big way tonight, and I'm proud to admit that.
I knew someone was going to bed in that fight. I just didn't know who. It wasn't because Yuri Prochazka was going to be overpowered by Volkan Ozdemir, but he's a wild man. He's just an insane guy. Like, he wants to go out there. He himself doesn't like to hurt people. He likes to fight, and he wants to get to the title, but he doesn't like to hurt people. So I was expecting this fight to end, like, because people forget. Like, people talk about, like, Volkan, like, his ratchet fight and his all his other fights, that like the Anthony Smith fight, that like they were all these like quote unquote like squeak wins or something like that. But that dude dropped like what? Who'd he be? Like Misha Cirkunov, Jimmy Manoa, like OSP. Like he has dynamite in his hand. So someone was going to bed in that fight. Jiří Prochazka just decided that after the first round, he just didn't want to fight anymore and just punched and ate Volkan Ozdemir's soul. He just wanted it over with. So, but yeah, talk about one of the great UFC debuts. That's got to be up there for like Gaethje had an unbelievable debut. Anderson Silva had an unbelievable debut. These are all just random ones I'm thinking off the top of my head. Alistair Overeem, of course. Yuri Prochazka, I mean, can't really have a much better performance than that against a former title challenger.
Did he miss the mark with the call out though? Johnny Walker? I don't know, man. I thought he was going to aim a little higher.
I mean, it's a fun fight. I'm not going to not watch that fight. Sure. I mean, I'll watch it. But again, he wants a quick way to the title. When's John Jones even going to fight? Like, that's a question we need answered if he's going to fight. I know Glover's going to fight Thiago Santos soon if John doesn't want to fight and Dominic Reyes fights Jan Blachowicz. Man, Corey Anderson maybe would have been a better call out. So, but yeah, sure, I'll watch it, but I don't think that's a step towards the title like he thinks.
Yeah, he could fight anybody right now. He's kind of at that he could fight a door status, and we're going to watch it anyways after a performance like that. Nice finish for Davy Grant with a broken jaw. That was impressive. Makhwan Amirkhani had a great submission as well. Put his opponent, Danny Henry, to sleep. But I want to shout you out, Jose, because I think, in my opinion, you had the best tweet of the night during the Marcin Tybura fight. You said, "What is the opposite of a slugfest? A chair? This fight is a chair." Want to explain yourself? Because that was brilliant.
Man, heavyweight MMA is so weird. You're going to have just violence. Like, every now and then you get, like, this epic, like, high-level martial arts fight. And you get those at the top. Like, you get the Stipes and the Cormiers, or, like, the JDSs and the Cain Velasquez. But somewhere in, like, that 5 to 15 range, one of two things is going to happen. Someone's going to bed, or it's going to be 15 minutes of just holding, or, like heavy grappling, breathing heavy. I don't like calling fights bad fights, because a win is a win. And if you win, you get the rest of your paycheck, and that should be the most important thing. So I'm not even going to remotely start to criticize Marcin Tybura for fighting for the rest of his check during a pandemic. But probably wasn't the fight that people wanted from heavyweights, especially that was the featured early prelim, right? Like, that was going into the ESPN card. Like, come on. I know Dana White was probably upset. Then he calls out Alexei Oleinik, and I was like, nah, not what I want. So, yeah, but again, yeah, what's the opposite of, like, a barn burner? What's the opposite of, like, a war? And I was like, I don't know. And I just look around, I'm like, that chair is just kind of sitting there. So yeah, the opposite of the fight I'm watching right now is this wooden chair sitting next to me, because it's not doing anything.
It was a brilliant tweet. It was a brilliant tweet. And a pretty interesting night at UFC 251, the debut of Fight Island. I thought everything looked pretty cool. Bruce Buffer looked A-plus dapper tonight, which was great. Anik's mustache was an A++. And Michael Bisping, he did okay. We did okay tonight.
Michael Bisping was really missing Paul Felder. I'll say that much. But I don't know how he had time to tweet at Dan Henderson and call fights. Very okay. I'll give C- to Michael Bisping. Basically openly rooting for Max Holloway during the fight. So very odd. But I think, like, looking back to, like, the last few pay-per-views, was this better? So dating back to UFC, I'll say UFC 240. Was Holloway Edgar. Between then and now, was this better than any of those pay-per-views? So 241 was DC Stipe 2. 242 was Habib Poirier. 243 was Whitaker Adesanya. 44 was BMF. 245 was Colby Covington Usman with all those titles. Then we had the McGregor Cowboy show. And then we had Yoan. And then we had the Valentina Jones Reyes fight in Houston, and then we had Izzy Romero, but then we also had Joanna and Zhang Weili in the co-main event, and then we had 249, which was bananas, in Jacksonville, and then 250, which we all agreed was one of the better fight cards at the Apex. From between 240 and now, I don't know if 251 in terms of action was better than any of those fights. It was a great card, but I think you have to go all the way back to 240 to really compare something that was on that level, which was, again, a great card. That was Chris Cyborg's last fight in the UFC, but wasn't the most stacked card.
I would agree with you, but again, devil's advocate seems to be the theme here. Those other cards, I mean, McGregor coming back was huge, fighting Cowboy, but we kind of expected it to be a showcase fight for Conor, and it delivered in that way. But most of these other cards, like, we were like, yeah, these are pretty cool, but we're in such strange times that the expectations weren't quite as high as this one was, at least in my view.
It was, but 249 had, what, just as many title fights, was stacked. It was like the first, it was really the first card during the, like, yes, we had that Brasilia card, but that was still in Brasilia. This was really the first, I really used 249 as, like, the first pandemic card. And that had, like, insane finishes, insane fights, like, top to bottom. It was, like, uncharted territory. And then the Apex card was awesome, too. So, again, great card. I'm not saying this is a bad card whatsoever. Right. But I think, even 240 was good. It just, I think they were on that level. And then even 239 and 238 and 237, 236. Like, you could go back all the way to January 28, like, the first ESPN card. You compare it to that, too. So, but good card, but I wouldn't say it was one of the. Dana White, I'll put it in this perspective. Dana White called UFC 249 a home run in terms of, like, everything that happened. I think it was great that this card happened on Fight Island, and it happened, and we got all the title fights that we were promised outside of the Burns one. But again, I think fans were more happy to see Masvidal fight to begin with. But in terms of what happened inside the octagon, I bet Dana White wished a lot. I bet he wished on some of these fights were maybe had a little bit more to it in the actual fight.
Yeah. I mean, the main event, it was like we knew it was going to happen. But we hoped it wouldn't, I guess. But the other two title fights are great. I just think, like, the length of the night kind of factored into things as well. But it was a really good card. And, you know, they're fighting at 6-7 o'clock in the morning local time, too.
It's also, what, like 98 degrees at 2 in the morning?
Yeah. So. A lot more wild circumstances than the Vegas cards and the Jacksonville cards, but we get to do this all again on Wednesday night with a great main event.
Awesome.
Calvin Kattar versus Dan Ige, big featherweight bout. We got Jimmy Rivera versus Cody Stamann on that card as well, which will be a lot of fun. I did talk to Cody Stamann late last week, so you could check that out on YouTube pretty soon as we head into that fight. But Jose, before we wrap this thing up, any final thoughts on UFC 251 and the look ahead to Wednesday night?
Man, I just got to give a shout out to Guillerme over in Abu Dhabi. He's really putting in, like, he gave us that tour of like the octagon on the beach, and I'm like, I'm sweaty watching this. Like, he's sitting in, he's been quarantined for like 56 hours. He's getting food delivered to him because he can't leave. It's 1,000 degrees. It's basically walking on the sun if the sun was underwater, where it's basically like you're swimming through 90 degree air. So shout out to Guillerme for putting in the work. The Wi-Fi and the internet might be terrible over there, but he's working his way through everything. So shout out to Guillerme. Stay safe over there.
Absolutely. The Brazilian beast making it happen. He's going to be there throughout the rest of these cards. So look forward to his coverage and all the different and unique perspectives that he will give and different videos he will produce as well. But that's it. I got to put my golf shirt on. I'm getting ready to go leave the house to go play golf with my dad in like 2 hours and change right now. So I'm probably going to shoot like a 125. But for Jose Youngs, I am Mike Heck. UFC 251 is in the books. The bow is officially placed on. Have a good rest of the weekend, everybody.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Support for this show comes from Fundrise. Buy low, sell high. It's easy to say, hard to do. For example, high interest rates are crushing the real estate market right now. Demand is dropping and prices are falling, even for many of the best assets. It's no wonder the Fundrise Flagship Fund plans to go on a buying spree, expanding its billion-dollar real estate portfolio over the next few months. You can add the Fundrise Flagship Fund to your portfolio in just minutes, and with as little as $10 by visiting fundrise.com/Vox. Carefully consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the Fundrise Flagship Fund before investing. This and other information can be found in the fund's prospectus at fundrise.com/flagship. This is a paid advertisement.